Welcome to Earth Matters, coming to you live here on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project, and also a partner in the Gila Conservation Coalition, and I'll be your host for today's program. Yesterday, the Interstate Stream Commission voted to move forward with a Gila River diversion project under the Arizona Water Settlements Act. Surrounding this decision, we've had complaints filed against the Interstate Stream Commission and local Gila San Francisco Water Commission regarding violations of the Open Meetings Act, calling into question the transparency and accountability of the AWSA planning process. Lots has happened on the Gila River diversion issue in the past few weeks, and given yesterday's decision, where do we go from here? We're here to talk about all of this on today's edition of Earth Matters with my guest, Todd Schulke, co-founder and senior staff with the Center for Biological Diversity, and also a partner in the Gila Conservation Coalition. Welcome, Todd.
Thanks, Allison. It's good to be here.
So, Todd, tell us what happened at yesterday's ISC meeting. And just to tell our listeners, we are going to be replaying here in the next segment yesterday's audio recording of that decision so people can hear it. But, Todd, give us, you know, give us an overview of what happened yesterday with the decision.
Well, the bottom line is the ISC, the commissioners, decided to go forward with the diversion. You know, no matter what the facts said and with all the controversy, they made that decision, which was not unexpected, but it was still really disappointing.
Yeah. And why? What does this really mean? I mean, why is it such a bad decision?
Well, I think a lot of people have heard the story, but it's an extremely expensive project, probably in the neighborhood of $1 billion or perhaps even more. There's probably very little water that will come out of it, certainly a lot less than the ISC and the Gila San Francisco Water Commission have been saying. So, you know, high cost, low yield, it's not a very good deal for taxpayers or local water users. And then in addition, of course, there's several endangered species along the river and it's already a fragile environment. So this will harm it even further.
So did any of these issues come up? I mean, there was an hour, well, actually half the meeting was spent on questions and answers on all of the diversion and non-diversion alternatives. I mean, did the commissioners get to any of these fundamental questions?
Not really. I mean, there was one commissioner that asked some questions about cost and expressed some concerns, and the state engineer expressed some concerns about cost. But essentially, it was obvious they'd made their minds up before they walked in the room. In fact, they had the resolution, the letter already written to send to the Secretary of Interior. So, you know, it was obviously a done deal before we even got there.
Mm-hmm. So what about some of the non-diversion alternatives? Because there were, something like, I can't remember the number, but 12 or so non-diversion alternatives. They think they lumped all of the diversion alternatives into one project. So they went through all of them, asked questions, and then decided to take the staff recommendations or not modify them. So what happened, especially on some of the more important ones like conservation and the Silver City project, what happened with those?
Well, it's a mixed bag. The staff recommendations were, you know, frankly, insulting. I mean, they threw sort of small amounts of money at these projects, I think, to make the public feel like they were addressing some of the concerns. Yesterday, the commissioners looked at those staff recommendations and more or less agreed with them, although they did add a little bit of money into, you know, for some reason, which isn't completely clear. But the most important one is they did fund some level of municipal conservation. I think the staff recommendation was $1.5 million, and they doubled that to $3 million. The downside is that it requires municipalities to come up with a 30% cash match, which is a very difficult thing. And it's unclear whether that's even allowed under the AWSA. I mean, this money was made available to communities to use, and why the ISC has the right to demand a cash match is a little beyond me. But there is some money available, even though it's far less than what could be used and what was requested. And then they provided some funding for some irrigation improvements, again, much, much less than the proponents asked for. And it makes me wonder whether any of those projects will actually move forward because there's so little money available. And these communities and these ditch associations have so little money that it's likely that a lot of these will never even happen. The biggest disappointment, I think, was the Grant County Regional Water Supply System, which serves probably the most amount of people for the least amount of money, and they tabled discussion about that. The staff recommendation included sort of what I think of as a poison pill, demanding that Silver City turn over some of its water rights to Hurley, where the system was designed to provide water to Hurley as well as all the other mining district communities. But by throwing in this poison pill, it created quite a lot of consternation amongst the commissioners. Well, what happens if Silver City doesn't want to give its water rights to Hurley? And so they just tabled it and didn't give it any money. And then along with that, the reservoir that would go in out by Fort Bayard, which we lovingly call Lake Ramos, also got tabled because it's dependent on water from the Gila River. And so they didn't want to fund it because they didn't know if the diversion would go through just yet. So that those things are still kind of hanging out there. But it appears that the ISC staff has had sort of a bone to pick with the Grant County Regional Water Supply System and not been very supportive. They've ranked it very low consistently. So we're not very hopeful that they'll fund that at the end of the day.
Projects. Yeah, and I think that we haven't seen yet, and maybe we'll see sometime this week, kind of the summary of what they actually did approve and some of the changes. So we'll make sure to make that available. But so what happens? There's $66 million available for non-diversion projects under the Arizona Water Settlements Act. That money can also go towards planning for a diversion project under the Arizona Water Settlements Act. So they didn't approve or allocate much of the $66 million to the non-diversion alternatives. What happens to the rest of it?
Yeah, I think we're in the neighborhood of about $10 million that went to non-diversion. So it's about a tenth of the available money right now, because the $66 million in current value of the money is close to $100 million. I mean, yeah. So they've spent a small percentage on the non-diversion, and then the rest is just going to sit in this account to be used, as you're saying, for planning and a variety of other things. So there were some surprises yesterday thrown out that, well, first of all, the staff told the commissioners that it's unlikely that if a diversion gets approved that it would happen for 20 years. And then in addition, which is more relevant to the money question, they're expecting that they're going to spend $20 million over the next year to do additional engineering on the large diversion proposal. And so before it even goes into the federal environmental analysis process, NEPA, they're going to have spent nearly half the money. And then the rest of the money is there available for planning and likely to be spent on that. In fact, the staff indicated to the commissioners that the planning and permitting and things like that were likely to cost 10-15% of the overall construction costs. So, if this project costs $1 billion, that's $100 million, which is what is available right now. So essentially the entire amount of money that was made available under the AWSA will be spent on planning for a project that's unlikely to ever get built. So the local communities are going to end up with nothing, really.
Right. What a shame. What a shame when we have these non-diversion alternatives that we could implement here pretty quickly would go a long way to meeting our long-term water needs. So any other surprises yesterday in terms of discussions? I think we heard Blaine Sanchez say that maybe you can talk more about the vote. I mean, he was the lone dissenting voice in approving staff recommendations on the diversion project. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, seven of the commissioners, well, including the state engineer, voted for the diversion. And as you say, Blaine Sanchez was the lone no vote. And his biggest concern was that they essentially didn't have adequate information to move forward with such an expensive project that put the state exposed the state to such huge expenditures. It seemed like the other commissioners were, you know, just looking at this as if, well, it's an opportunity we can't let go by. We'd be stupid to, you know, not pursue this further, even though the facts show that this water is going to be incredibly expensive and the project's likely infeasible. And, you know, if it were just sort of a bet against the future with no consequences, that would be one thing. But as I said earlier, we're likely to spend all the resources that are available, and so we'll have missed this great opportunity to deal with our water issues.
And he also said that he felt that he hadn't heard any local municipalities really coming forward and saying that they're committing to paying for this project, right?
Right. There was, you know, he acknowledged that there had been a lot of sort of, you know, claims that people wanted the water, but none of the you know, local politicians or communities really stepped forward and you know, provided concrete plans about how they'd pay for it, how they use the water, and all those kind of things, which were pretty fundamental to moving forward with a project like this.
Right. And then I think we had one commissioner abstained from voting. Who is that?
Yeah, Topper Thorpe, who's our local commissioner from the Gila Valley, who's been a vocal proponent of the diversion, but he's also an irrigator in the valley and stands to gain from this project. So he abstained from the vote.
He abstained from the vote. So, okay. Why don't we take a short break here, and we're going to come back and play the audio recording of yesterday's decision. So stay with us, and we'll be back with Todd Schulke talking about the Interstate Stream Commission's vote yesterday to move forward with the Gila River Diversion Project. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Sivik, your host for today's program. And I'm here in the studio with Todd Schulke, co-founder and senior staff with the Center for Biological Diversity. And today we're talking about yesterday's decision by the New Mexico Interstate Stream Commission to move forward with a Gila River diversion project. And let me just set the stage for everybody. The first half of the meeting, the Interstate Stream Commission commissioners went project by project. So through all the non-diversion alternatives and the diversion alternatives, and asked the staff questions. So there was a lot of back and forth for the first half of the meeting. And then after lunch, they came back, finished up a bit more of those questions, and then went into making decisions on each of those projects. And so what we'd like to do right now is listen to the audio recording of the ISC commissioner's decision on the Gila River diversion project. So we're going to cut to that here in a couple seconds.
Item number two, Southwest Regional Water Supply. Pleasure of the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I would move adoption of the staff recommendation. This, without a doubt, is the most difficult of the various alternatives for me personally. However, I think under the circumstances of New Mexico's drought conditions, and the fact that so many New Mexicans rely on water resources, that the staff recommendations make sense to me to not lose this New Mexico water to Arizona. So I move adoption of the second staff proposal.
Second motion. Is there any discussion on the motion, Mr. Secretary?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd like to just make a statement on this item, if I might. I'm going to read some notes that I've been jotting down here this afternoon. The New Mexico Interstate Stream Commission is charged with leading state and regional water planning in the 16 planning regions. A goal of regional water planning is to identify and implement strategies to balance supply and demand in the region for the long run. Planning, in my opinion, should be an all-of-the-above approach and have all of your eggs in one basket. The item we just voted on, municipal conservation, is appropriately ranked high. I'm really encouraged that it ranked high. It had the highest benefit-cost ratio But if it's a good idea today, it was also a good idea 5 years and 10 years and 15 years ago. And I'm personally appreciative of the fact that municipal conservation got a good ranking. I'm personally disappointed that it's been used as a leverage to try and keep other proposals from moving ahead. Few of New Mexico's regions have an opportunity to develop new water. This one does. And we encourage regional solutions to water supply. I am concerned with the cost and with the willingness and ability to pay by the proponents. Willingness seems apparent. Ability to pay is not yet, I think, completely vetted. However, I'm personally unwilling to preclude the development of this water to New Mexico by preventing it from going to the next step. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Any further discussion? Mr. Mark Sanchez.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify that what the motion includes is simply a notice to the Secretary of Interior and planning to develop the HELO. I mean, we are a decade or two from any real impacts on the HELO.
Staff recommendation is to notify the Secretary. Yes.
And Mr. Chairman, there are five other bullets on the staff recommendation here involving additional steps. It is the notification to the Secretary of Interior that is the most time sensitive, as pointed out in the staff recommendation. But I'm embracing all of those recommendations.
Thank
in
you.
My motion.
Thank you. Mr. Bland, Sanchez.
Reflecting on Secretary Berline's comments, I too agree with what he says, and I think you've heard my earlier comments regarding this project proposal. While I am in agreement, as I said, with Secretary Berline's statements and our duty as the IEC, I have reservations in, one, the ability to pay for this, not just necessarily the end users. I think, as been indicated, there is willingness to pay, but I think the in-between getting to that point where they can pay is a question. My earlier comment made that, you know, I really haven't heard from those individuals that would be the ones leveraging funding. You know, are we going to get it from the state? Are we going to get it from the feds? It's been silent, so, you know, not hearing anything public or privately regarding that, it makes me hesitant to, you know, go forward, not in the sense of not supporting this project, but the details of who's going to pay for it or how is it going to be paid for. And as I indicated also, there's, you know, other details because it hasn't been fully vetted or looked into, 10%, and we're looking at 30% now. You know, perhaps if I was at a 30%, you know, level and having more information, you know, I would provide, you know, full support. But I guess I just want to qualify, you know, my position. Thank you.
Mr. Crowder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment before we vote. There were points of time through this process where light bulb moments happened in your head. And so one of mine is a fear of a stranded asset or getting into something that can't be used and useful. And my decision basically came when I realized or when staff educated me to the point that we can do this in phases. And in fact, if we do phase one, we almost have enough funding now to do phase one. If it were to do a diversion, a tunnel, and the small spar would be 1,645 feet. It would provide a flow when the river is dry to put water back in the river to keep the fish alive. And when I realized that just phase one of this becomes used and useful and will save fish, it changed my perspective on the whole project. It may be a while before we get phase two. We may not have the funding, but the funding we have available will do phase one and it's used and useful. And when I kind of arrived at that spot, I realized this is a good project.
Thank you. Any further comments? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed?
Opposed, Mr. Chairman.
Motion is carried.
Mr. Chairman, I request that the record reflect that I did not vote on this issue.
Thank you, Commissioner Cutler. I believe the Secretary has a resolution that we should consider at this time.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. In light of that decision, I believe it appropriate that the Commission consider the following resolution, if I can read it. Resolution of the Mexico's Interstate Stream Commission regarding the notification of the Secretary of Interior pursuant to the 2004 Arizona Water Settlements Act. Whereas the Arizona Water Settlements Act, AWSA, was passed by Congress and signed into law by the President in 2004 as Public Law 108-451. Whereas the AWSA allocates to New Mexico an annual average of up to 14,000 acre feet consumptive use of additional water from the Gila Basin in New Mexico, and two, between 66 and 128 million in non-reimbursable federal funding. Whereas the AWSA mandates that the New Mexico Interstate Stream Commission make the final determination regarding how the additional water and the money available to the state under the act will be utilized. Section 212D1 and Section 212I, respectively, of the AWSA. Whereas pursuant to the AWSA, New Mexico must provide notice to the Secretary of Interior no later than December 31st, 2014, if it intends to develop the additional water through the construction of a New Mexico unit of the Central Arizona Project. And whereas the Commission voted on November 24, 2014, in an open public meeting to pursue the development of a diversion and storage project through a New Mexico unit of the Central Arizona Project. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the New Mexico Interstate Stream Commission, through its chairman, Mr. Jim T. Dunlap, will notify Ms. Sally Jewell, Secretary of the United States Department of Interior, on or before December 31st, 2014, that the state of New Mexico intends to have constructed or developed the New Mexico unit of the Central Arizona Project. Approved this 24th day of November at the meeting of the New Mexico Interstate Stream Commission held in Albuquerque, New Mexico, signed Jim T. Dunlap, Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You have heard the resolution. What's the pleasure of the
committee? Move for approval of the resolution.
We have a
second.
Motion been made and seconded by Commissioner Harris. And a second. Any discussion on the resolution?
Okay, there you have it. 7 votes for moving forward with a Gila River diversion project, 1 vote no, Commissioner Blaine Sanchez, and 1 abstention, that is local Commissioner Topper Thorpe. That last bit of discussion was regarding a resolution to send the letter to Secretary of the Interior, Sally Jewell, notifying her that the state does intend to develop the New Mexico unit of the Central Arizona Project. And there was some discussion. Blaine Sanchez, even though he voted against the Gila River Diversion Project and the staff recommendations, he did vote for the resolution to send the letter to the secretary. So that vote passed unanimously. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that, Todd. So Blaine, again, he cited, people could hear exactly his rationale. High costs, he feels that he's still missing a lot of information on this project. We're only at 10% design. They've got to get to 30% design. So he felt there really wasn't enough information to say yes to that, to the staff recommendations on the diversion project. And also he had some big questions about financing. Do you want to comment a little more on his rationale for voting no?
Well, I think his comments sort of speak for themselves, you know, and it's, I mean, I think we have a little bit different version of the same theme, in that we actually think there is plenty of information. So, you know, it's sort of funny to hear the one lone no vote say, well, I don't have enough. But, there's multiple studies. The economics are clear. The costs, you know, just go up and up. They're not going down. And, you know, so while we were appreciative that he didn't support the project, it was for sort of funny reasons.
Right. And so the other thing that happened yesterday is, let me take a step back. Randy Crowder talked about phasing of the diversion project in terms of implementation. What does that really mean? What was he trying to say? And that somehow made him feel better supporting the project.
Yeah, it's sort of a part of the discussion that the public hasn't been very privy to, which is a theme we'll talk about later. But he suggested that the staff had indicated that they could build the big diversion, punch the tunnel through the mountain, and build a small reservoir in Spar Canyon, which is a small side canyon at the top of the Gila Valley, and provide a small amount of water, you know, supposedly for fish, which the ecological studies don't really support that very well. And then also a small amount of water for agricultural use in the valley. But you know, the downside of that is that a lot of the damage caused by that project would be done in the first phase. So, you know, it's from an ecological standpoint, environmental standpoint, it's not a very comforting consolation or whatever. So,
right. So he was trying to leave people with the impression, oh, wow, this is going to be very easy. We can finance this. But as you indicate, huge hurdles, right, from an environmental standpoint.
Yeah. And it still has to go through NEPA, and all the challenges that existed for the full proposal still exist.
Right.
I mean, the storage, while they're problematic, the reservoirs are problematic from a yield standpoint, they're not the primary ecological problem. The damage is caused by taking water out of the river. And then additionally, you know, he said, well, we have the money to do this now. But as we talked about earlier, half the $66 million is going to get spent before they even start NEPA, and likely a large chunk of it will get spent on NEPA. And they didn't even talk about litigation. That's a whole other theme. But so there really isn't very much of money available. So I think it was kind of over the top for Commissioner Crowder to say we can afford this now. It's just not true.
Right, right. So one other thing, State Engineer Scott Verhines mentioned his personal disappointment that the Municipal Conservation Project was being used as leverage to keep other projects down. Do you think that was a fair statement to make?
No, I think it was just sour grapes on Mr. Verhines' part. You know, we've been promoting conservation as a real alternative, as a way to meet the long-term water needs and keep these communities, flush with water. And so for him to, say we were using it as a foil is just disingenuous. I mean, we had real proposals that, were well-developed. And obviously, the analysis, they rated municipal conservation as the highest. So it's a viable alternative. And I don't take that, his criticism, seriously at all.
Okay, well, we'll be right back after this short break, and stay with us as we continue our conversation with Todd Schulke and the Gila River Diversion Project here on Earth Matters on Gila Members Community Radio, 89.1 FM. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic of Gila Resources Information Project and the Gila Conservation Coalition, and I'm your host for today's program. I'm joined here in the GMCR studio by Todd Schulke, co-founder and senior staff with the Center for Biological Diversity, and also a partner in the Gila Conservation Coalition. And I'd like to sort of shift gears here and talk about some of the transparency issues that have come up surrounding the Arizona Water Settlements Act planning process. Back in September, former Interstate Stream Commission Director Norm Gaum gave the ISC notice that he was going to be filing a lawsuit against the agency or the commission for Open Meetings Act violations, and The Gila Conservation Coalition also has a complaint regarding the local Gila San Francisco Water Commission. Todd, give us a sense of sort of what's been happening on this whole transparency issue that really has left a very bad taste in everyone's mouths, I think, over how things have gone down on the planning process.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate after 10 years of dealing with this issue and, you know, and lots of meetings and whatnot, that both at the state level and the local level that these decision-making bodies have resorted to, you know, sort of backroom dealing and not keeping the public informed about what's going on. You know, whenever the public has to resort to things like Open Meetings Act claims and public information requests and things like that, just to know what's going on, you know, the process is broken.
Right. So take us back to September. Former Interstate Stream Commission Norm Gom, who's been a vocal critic since January of this year against the diversion project, and he's filed many Inspection of Public Records Act requests to try and get basic fundamental technical information on the diversion project. He filed an Open Meetings Act claim against the commission. What was that about?
Yeah, he filed suit on two basic things. One, there's a subcommittee of the Interstate Stream Commission, the Gila subcommittee, that has been meeting periodically, really for many years. And they come back to the commission and report that we had a meeting, we talked, and that's it. I mean, there's always like a 5-minute slot to report the findings of the subcommittee, and they've been charged most recently with helping the staff, the ISC staff, optimize the big diversion proposal, sort of combining an array of diversion proposals into one large kind of comprehensive project. And it's sort of baffling how they can be helping and advising and even making decisions on this and then not reporting it during the public meetings. So that was one of Norm's claims. And then the other was that the ISC staff has been authorizing very large contracts to their consultants to the tune of tens of thousands, you know, I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars, really, without vetting it in front of the commission first. So Norm gave them notice, as you said, went in front of a judge and was successful in getting a temporary restraining order, which means that in this case, it depends on what the judge says, what the terms of the restraining order are. In this case, it said that the ISC could move forward with having informational meetings, but couldn't make any decisions. So they've had 2 or 3 meetings during that period and took public comment and looked at a bunch of different studies, but didn't make any decisions until yesterday. So unfortunately, the original judge, which gave Norm Gom the temporary restraining order, recused himself from the case for some reason that's been sealed by the court. So something happened that we don't know, we don't understand. And the new judge looked at the case last week and determined that he was going to vacate the temporary restraining order. So that allowed the ISC to move forward with this meeting where they made the decision to support diversion. That doesn't mean that the Open Meetings Act claims go away. There's, I think, a hearing or a trial scheduled for April where the actual details of the of Norm's suit will get sorted out. And from what I've read and what I understand, they've got a good shot at holding these folks accountable.
So my understanding of the judge vacating the temporary restraining order is that he asked Norm to post a $62 million bond. What do you think about that? Does that have a chilling effect on citizens bringing these types of suits against state agencies?
Yeah, clearly. I mean, these systems, these laws are set up to help citizens hold their government accountable and to hold an individual, you know, accountable for $62 million is obviously, you know, it's punitive, really. I mean, it's and discourages people from doing this kind of thing. I mean, you know, most people wouldn't take that risk. And so I think it was, it was really an unconscionable move on the part of the judge to do that. And, you know, ultimately Norm decided to continue on with the suit, even though he's at great personal risk. But, you know, he believes that they've done wrong here and that they need to be held accountable. So, but yeah, I think it was just a terrible move on the part of the judge.
Okay, so we will have to wait until April of next year to find out what happens on the merits of Norm Gom's Open Meetings Act case. So let's come down here to Grant County, and the Gila Conservation Coalition filed an Open Meetings Act complaint with the New Mexico Attorney General's office. And why was that? What were some of the three violations of the Open Meetings Act in the complaint?
Yeah, well, there are actually three different parts of it. And essentially, there were decisions being made, sort of in this fast frenzy that people have found themselves, leading up to the decision. One was there was a resolution by the Gila San Francisco Water Commission to designate themselves as the New Mexico CAP entity, which is essentially be the local group in charge of helping design but ultimately run the big diversion project. And that resolution was never publicly noticed, so people didn't understand that this was happening and therefore, couldn't show up. And it was also about prioritizing projects. The commission asked them to, prioritize the projects according to the entities on the commission. But again, the process wasn't noticed to the public. So people didn't have the opportunity to show up and share their opinion or be informed of what was happening. So the second one was, there's a financing plan that has been pushed by a local, it's an international bonding company that does local bonding with the county commission. And they've been pushing a financing scheme, which is, sort of actually looks like privatization of water, which has us greatly concerned. But there were actually expense paid junkets where people were flown up to Denver and courted by investors it just has kind of a smell to it. And so this financing plan was presented to the Interstate Stream Commission on the behalf of the Gila San Francisco Water Commission. And there was never any public discussion about that. And then the third was the Gila San Francisco Water Commission intervened on behalf of the ISC in Norm Gom's Open Meetings Act lawsuit. And they didn't even have a public meeting. It wasn't that it wasn't noticed. They just didn't do it. Members of the commission just made the decision on the fly and hired Pete Domenici Jr.'s law firm to represent them and came out pretty strongly against Norm's temporary restraining order and Open Meetings Act claim. So, there's just a pattern here of doing things behind closed doors and without keeping the public informed. And in fact, some of the members of the commission admitted to these things publicly and at least in one case basically said that they didn't really care. These were all details and they were under pressure to get things done and they didn't do anything wrong, even though it's clear that they violated the law.
So last Tuesday, the Gila San Francisco Water Commission had a meeting to address these three violations. So they approved intervening in Norm Gom's Open Meetings Act case. They approved the prioritization of the Arizona Water Settlements Act projects, but they tabled the financing plan. So they didn't actually fix that violation necessarily. They said, we're tabling this financing plan until we can get more information from other financial planners, other professionals that could help us talk about or help us figure out how to finance a diversion project. So, Todd, is the Open Meetings Act complaint still live, even though these guys, tried to quote-unquote fix things at their meeting last week? What will happen?
Yeah, well, the Attorney General will take a look at this, and, the violations were done, and so it doesn't matter that they've you know, sort of gone back and, you know, and cleaned up their mess. It's still live. And if you know, it's clear they violated the law, they'll be held accountable. So I don't know exactly when that's going to happen, but yeah, there's nobody's off the hook here.
Right. So you talked about this financing. Let's just quickly say why, talk about a little bit why this financing plan is so important. I mean, it had, you know, serious deficiencies and problems with it, and really to not ever have been discussed in public before it was presented to the Interstate Stream Commission. You know, why was that a problem? What are some of the problems with the financing plan?
Well, the first thing is, you know, it was presented to the commission, you know, again, as a product of the Gila San Francisco Water Commission, which implied that they had at least an idea how they were going to pay for this, which influences potentially the decision of the commissioners, the ISC commissioners. But the problems with the plan, I mean, it's looking more and more like a scam at this point, frankly. I mean, the assumptions that went into the plan, developing the plan, are just wrong. And they're, you know, this is information that's publicly available. And I have no doubt that the people that are pushing this plan from GK Baum are, you know, they know what's going on. They're following this very closely. So some of the problems include they used the full 14,000 acre feet of water as the basis for the amount of water that they would lease to get revenues from. Well, it's been clear for quite some time that there's not 14,000 acre feet of water. They also used an inflated number for the amount of federal subsidy that's available, the full $128 million. And Bureau of Reclamation has made it clear that the second amount is really $34 million, not $62 million. So it's a lot less than, you know, people think it is that's going to be available. And then now we're finding out that, you know, so much of the first pot of money, the first $66 million, is going to be gone. So the amount of federal subsidy is going to be quite a lot less. So there's some basic assumptions that go into this thing that are just, they're just wrong. And it's easily available information. And it really makes you feel like, you know, this, they're pushing this idea onto the locals, and they know they're going to make money. And frankly, I don't think they care whether it hurts us or not. Otherwise they'd be doing a more honest job of portraying this.
Right. And in the Gila San Francisco Water Commission meeting last week, Luna County Manager Tink Jackson, in his public comment, sort of brushed off and dismissed the Open Meetings Act violations and said, you know, we're all human. We make these mistakes. We fix it and move on. And he was very dismissive. Why should we, as citizens, why should we care about the Open Meetings Act and you know, that our local officials are really following the law in terms of public participation and public involvement in these decisions?
Well, you know, I think sometimes you could argue that some of the decisions aren't that consequential, and so it's really just about good government. But in this case, it's much, much more serious than that, because the deliberations that are going on behind closed doors and the plans and, you know, flying to Denver and all those things will result potentially in local water users and taxpayers being on the hook for hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, for instance, the one analysis looked at cost to municipal users in Deming, and it would increase their water bills over 10 times. I mean, this is real. These are real consequences for people. And so for them to be playing a little fast and loose with the law and making decisions without, you know, people understanding what's going on and understanding the consequences is just wrong.
Right. So, well, I guess we'll hear more at the December meeting of the Gila San Francisco Water Commission when they start their discussion again on the financing plan. So we'll be right back with Earth Matters after this short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic of Gila Resources Information Project and the Gila Conservation Coalition. And I'm your host for today's program. And I'm joined live in the studio by Todd Schulke, co-founder and senior staff with the Center for Biological Diversity. And he's also with the Gila Conservation Coalition. So, Todd, yesterday was the first decision point in this 10-year-long planning process under the Arizona Water Settlements Act. So let's shift gears and talk about where do we go from here. And is there a role for Governor Martinez in the immediate term?
Well, we think so. You know, the commissioners on the Interstate Stream Commission all serve at the pleasure of the governor. She appoints them and can unappoint them, and so they're essentially accountable to her. And so ultimately, this really is her decision. And if she wanted to and understood the vast financial burden that this is going to put on people, you know, as we call it, the billion-dollar boondoggle, she could step in and keep this letter from going forward. And so we're encouraging people to call and write letters and ask her to not send the letter, you know, to get in front of this and do the right thing. And, you know, it's unclear whether she cares, but she should. You know, if I were her, I wouldn't want to have a billion-dollar boondoggle hung around her neck.
Right, right. So let's assume that Governor Martinez does not step in. And New Mexico does indeed send the letter to the Secretary of Interior. What happens now for the next 5 or so years? Talk a little bit about some of the next steps.
Well, the first step is over the year of 2015, the state has to develop what's called the New Mexico Unit Agreement, which is a little sketchy exactly what that is. But what it's starting to look like is that they would further develop the diversion proposal, do some additional engineering. Again, we heard the number $20 million being thrown around yesterday as the potential cost for that. But so they would do some further engineering, develop the project even more, probably even develop some alternatives that would carry forward into the environmental analysis. Because under NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, they have to look at the effects of different alternatives from projects. So at this point, it's unclear what those alternatives would be. So I would expect that would come out of it. Presumably, they'll have to do some more work on, you know, the thing that's concerned a lot of people, even in the commission, of the cost and who's going to pay. But it's unclear exactly what that will look like and how much work they'll have to get done. But we expect that they will have an agreement done by the end of the year. It could happen faster. That's the drop dead date is the end of 2015. And then after that, supposedly they'll start NEPA, and they've said that having the New Mexico agreement is sort of the trigger for NEPA. They have to have the agreement before they can move into NEPA, even though that's not sort of the letter of the law in the Arizona Water Settlements Act. That's how they've laid the process out. And then once they go into NEPA, that's a whole new realm. The Bureau of Reclamation takes over as the lead, with the caveat that the Interstate Stream Commission is a co-lead, which we don't know exactly what that'll look like. But we're hoping that the BOR will do a much more honest job of evaluating the costs and the feasibility of this and the environmental impacts, and you know, and that the things that have been coming out will be more obvious, and that they'll do a more honest assessment. And then at some point, they'll make a determination on which alternative they think is potentially viable, and they'll hand it over to the Fish and Wildlife Service, who will look at the proposed action and look at the impacts on species and propose potential mitigation for any action, if in fact mitigation's possible. It's possible there won't be any mitigation possible that can deal with whatever issues are caused. And then eventually it'll come to the record of a decision, which is due by the end of 2019. Although there is a little proviso that if they aren't ready to make a decision and it's not at the fault of the state, which actually all this is the fault of the state. So I don't see how they get out of that one, but they could extend that deadline. But presumably at the end of 2019, we'll have a decision to deal with, and And then, you know, then the court case will start to fly.
So this is not a slam dunk by any means. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about maybe the environmental, ecological impacts. We've got this Gila River Flow Needs Assessment, a study that was produced by 50 scientists that reached consensus that a Gila River diversion project would negatively impact the hydrology and ecology of the Gila River. And we've got all these threatened and endangered species. So let's talk in a little bit more detail about, you know, it's really going to be an uphill battle, really, to get over these regulatory hurdles, right?
Yeah. So the bottom line of the flow needs assessment is that the diversion would take water out at a critical moment in the spring runoff. And it's critical for the fish because that's when they spawn, and you know, so it's a moment where they need certain flows, and those flows would be reduced significantly during that period, and then it's also critical for the birds, because those spring flows tend to spread out on the floodplain and both water and fertilize the floodplain, but also allow for establishment of new cottonwood and willow you know, plants that the birds in particular need. And so that, you know, it's shown clearly that there will be an impact, even though the IAC has paid these, you know, these high dollar consultants to kind of counter that. And it's pretty hard to ignore the facts. So, yeah, I mean, there's six, maybe even seven endangered species, depending on how you count, and that's a pretty high hurdle to get over. And you can bet that we'll be paying close attention to that and doing our best to hold them accountable on those issues.
And you talked or mentioned previously mitigation. There are already three, I believe, mitigation properties out on the Gila River that are mitigation for other damages that have occurred in the lower Colorado River Basin. And just given the location of these mitigation properties, they could be impacted by a diversion project. So how does this work? I mean, how can you mitigate the mitigation?
Yeah, well, you might be able to, but it would be incredibly expensive. You know, so in the case of these pieces of land that you're talking about, the federal agencies purchased that land to protect them for, let's say, I think Southwest Willow Flycatcher or the loach minnow and spike dace, the endangered fish that are out there. And so they're already, you know, sort of booked up, so to speak. You know, they've been set aside for protection of those species. And there's not that much land available to do that kind of thing, and so, you know, they'd have to somehow double or triple up for the impacts on those lands, and it's unclear to us how that would really work. So I think that's not a very viable approach for mitigation, and you know, even emphasizes more that we should protect these species, not to try to mitigate the destruction of them.
Right. And so in the last few remaining minutes, let's talk a little bit about cost and, you know, what's going to happen over the next 5 years in terms of cost benefit and financing of a project. I mean, you know, the last go round in the late 80s, when the Bureau of Reclamation was studying the Mongoose diversion alternative and came to the mayor of Silver City and said, okay, after they've spent $6 million in planning, mayor, here's your repayment schedule. And the mayor said, sorry, we can't afford this, and we have sufficient water supplies. We don't need this water, and we're not going to pay for this project. How does that work? Are we going to be in a similar situation here over the next 5 years with financing a project?
Well, it's hard to tell exactly. You know, a lot of this is not happening in the public eye, but it does seem like at some point, somebody's going to have to step forward and be accountable for the costs. And, you know, the ISC staff has repeatedly said that it's going to be covered by water users. Well, as I said, you know, in the case of Deming, that would mean the increase of their water bills 10 times or more. And one of the things that people don't really understand probably is that this, you know, best case scenario, this project, if it were ever to be built, won't always produce water, and people will be on the hook for paying for it, whether there's water coming out of it or not. So, you know, it's, yeah, people are, you know, they're going to have to face that music at some point. But, you know, one of the concerns that we have is, you know, if this financing plan really takes hold, one of the pieces of it is that they'd pay back the bonds with, at least partially, with the revenue from leasing the water, which means that the GK BOM would lease the water from the Gila San Francisco Water Commission, really the Secretary of Interior, through the commission, and then they would turn around and lease it to the highest bidder in order to make enough revenue to pay off the bonds. And, you know, who knows where that water would go at that point. So, you know, there's a lot of unknowns, and it's pretty unsettling, and, you know, and ultimately just makes this whole thing seem ridiculous.
Right, and water for ag users, what, $8,000 an acre foot?
That's what the best calculations have come up with. So, you know, that's a huge amount more than what people are currently paying. So, you know, I don't know how that makes sense.
All right. Well, thank you, Todd Schulke of the Center for Biological Diversity, for talking with me today about yesterday's Interstate Stream Commission decision to move forward with a Gila River Diversion Project under the Arizona Water Settlements Act. Please visit gmcr.org for more information and audio recordings of the ISC's Gila River Diversion decision. Thanks to our audio engineer, Kyle Johnson. And thank you for tuning in to this week's program. I'm Allison Civic, and I hope you'll join us again for next week's edition of Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio 89.1 FM.